On Sunday, March 24th at 11 p.m., Sugar Ma Bowl will feature song stylist, pianist, and arranger, Diane Shore. Tune in to find out more about this phenomenal artist. That's Sunday, March 24th at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. Hi, my name is Joyce Jones, and I'm here with Deedles, Diane Deedles Shore. Hi, Miss Deedles.
Hello, Joycey. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
You've got to tell me, how did you wind up with this name, Deedles? I understand you got it when you were younger.
Oh, my mother heard me scatting around the house, and so that's how that came about, and she called me Deedle Babe, and so ever since then, Deedle Babe was shortened to Deedles, Deeds, Deedly Weedly, Deedle Bug, all, you know, just lots of Deedly Do, just lots of nicknames, even within the nickname itself.
Excellent. Another thing, your parents, first off, you were born in Tacoma, Washington, I hear.
Correct.
Yeah, and what were your parents doing?
My mom and dad were working like a couple of different jobs. My father, when I was born, was training to be a police officer, and he was on that job for 31 years. My mother, when we were growing up, we moved to Auburn a couple of years after we were in Tacoma, Auburn, Washington, that is. And my mom and dad started working renovating cars at a place called Valley Motors. It was the Little Detroit of the West is what Auburn was nicknamed, you see. So, and I remember being in this like 52 Dodge with my brother and sister when I was a kid, and mom and dad would take us to where they worked, and we'd sit in the car and listen to the radio for hours on end. One time we did that for so long that the battery actually went dead and we had to get out and help push. And yeah, and I know, it was pretty funny. And I remember we used to drink orange soda pop. It was funny. But I listened to a lot of really good music back when I was younger. My earliest influence was Dinah Washington. I grew up listening to her stuff. And Sarah Vaughan used to get a lot of wonderful albums of good jazz, because my father was into country and my mom was into jazz, and listened to Duke Ellington, an album that he did with In My Solitude and Willow Weep for Me and Autumn Leaves, and just a whole bunch of wonderful Dancing in the Dark, wonderful songs that were on there that my mom really loved. And I listened to a lot of George Shearing when I was growing up, who he died 2 years ago, Valentine's Day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, you know, I just was influenced, listened to the early rock and roll of the day and all that kind of stuff. And even when I was about two, I remember prattling off the news that President Eisenhower had a slight cold, and then come out and say that, you know, just in general conversation, because I always talked as an adult. I never did that baby talk or anything like that. I know, it's pretty funny. And my dad played piano by ear, so I call it watching. I would feel when his hands were moving up and down the keys and so on. And he used to do Boogie Woogie Blues in the key of C, and other songs he'd play in the key of E flat. Those are the two keys that he knew how to play the chords in. It's funny. And my grandmother, we used to call her Mama Jo. She used to play piano as well. And it was just a really interesting childhood. My father picked up guitar, and I actually have on tape, which was converted to MP3, him and I playing 5'2", and my brother and sister singing along and all of that kind of stuff. So it was very interesting growing up as a kid and being exposed to all of this good music. And then when I was 4 and a half, I started going to the state school for the blind in Vancouver, Washington. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of shy as a child on the musical level. Used to go into the closet of my bedroom at the school and sing by the hour. And then when I thought nobody was listening, I'd sneak out to the playroom and play the piano and try to discover different chords and stuff. I even took up trumpet.
Wow.
I didn't stick with it. There was a young piano player by the name of Robert Sherman. Everybody called him Sparky, and he taught me the trumpet. And then there was a woman by the name of Nadine Lassard. She was also blind. They both were. And she taught me how to do stride piano in my younger years, as well as light classical fugues and so on. So it was very interesting.
You're pretty much answering all of my questions before I even ask them.
Well, I've been told I'm very intuitive, okay? So I just kind of like go along and says, I wonder what she's going to ask. And then I thought, well, let's just kind of like go along this stream and see how far I can go before the next question's asked. So.
Well, with regard to your being a little adult in your communication.
Yes.
On Some Other Time recording.
Yeah.
They included a recording of you at 10 years old during September in the Rain, and you do sound exactly like Dinah Washington.
Oh, yeah.
The leaves are brown, came tumbling down, remember.
And then right before the tune Danny Boy, you hear the dialogue of my mom and right. me. Do you know the song Danny Boy? And you can hear me, you know, talk as a little girl.
Diane, do you know the song Danny Boy? I'm going to record this, Mama. The song just for you, Mom.
So. Uh-huh. Yeah, I know.
It's amazing. You did not sound 10 at all. It was like fully formed vocalizing.
Well, I was developed vocalizing, and I also developed in the chest area at that age. I developed early. So remember exactly where I was when I found that out. I was in the rec room of the state school, and The Wizard of Oz was on, and I think it was when the Tin Man was doing his, and I thought, oh, my gosh, I've developed in the chest area. I listened to a lot of classical when I was a kid. The first classical piece I learned was Clair de Lune.
Mm.
I played that as a little kid. And I guess some people would call me a prodigy, being able to learn stuff
sure.
that early. Uh-huh.
Oh, so. By the way, you revisited September in the Rain, and that was
yes.
on Love Songs,
yes.
1993.
God, yes. God, what research, girlfriend. I really appreciate it.
Though spring is here It's still September. Now that September.
Yeah, I revisited. I did a different version of September in the Rain completely. It was a ballad. In fact, I have a funny sense of humor. We were in the limo, and the guy who was my assistant, his name was Fred Perry. I used to call him Fredly Wedley. You know, there's all these people that had these nicknames. And I remember him, instead of "the leaves are brown, came falling down, remember," he sang, "my teeth are brown, I need to go to the dentist."
Oh my gosh. Excellent. You had mentioned the piano playing. You're playing piano. And, you know, a lot of people, I know, for myself included, although I've seen you sit at the piano, I'm more knowledgeable of your being a vocalist. But I heard this version of Miles Davis's Nardis, which was on Music Is My Life. That's the only Atlantic record release.
Yeah.
Thank you.
that. It was amazing. Do you have other cuts like that? Just instrumental?
I have one. No, that's it.
Wow.
That's the only recording as far as instrumental that I've done in all the years as far as playing.
Why is it?
I don't know, but on the album, The Gathering, the country record, I don't know if you had a chance to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
I play piano on every track.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And as a pianist, I was talking with Harold Mayburn.
Yeah.
And he was pretty much talking about the art of comping. And in listening to you, I noticed that you're an amazing accompanist for yourself.
Well, thank,
when you do.
Thank you. Thank you.
Does that work easier for you on ballads or upbeat, or it just doesn't matter?
In general, I'm okay with both on, you know, tempos. But I've learned how to comp. I mean, for one thing, it saves money, I guess, for the buyers, you know,
right.
Or if I play piano and versus grabbing a piano player. But, yeah, I love to be able to comp behind myself.
And I also noticed another pianist that you've played with a lot, Alan Broadbent.
Yeah, we just finished a gig in New York at the Blue Note, and I didn't play piano at all. I had completely new material that was, of course, old standards that were recorded by both Frank Sinatra and Dan Deb. So we were able to cover, I guess, double legacies of these two people that I knew very well on this repertoire of tunes that I did in New York. And that was really a lot of fun. I want to record these tunes in the studio, tunes like Change Partners and It's Wonderful, How Insensitive, I Remember You, The Second Time Around, Nice and Easy, Under My Skin, Watch What Happens, Didn't We, For Once in My Life, you know, tunes like that. So there's a beautiful rendition of a tune that I think there were two tunes that Hoagy Carmichael wrote, I Get Along Without You Very Well and Don't Worry About Me. We segue into that. So I think I've named almost all of the tunes that was on this project that we did in New York. So I'll be working with Alan once again in Boston when I do Scholars this summer, as well as a gig in Long Island.
Oh.
There might be something else. But folks, you can always look on the website, www.dianeshore.com, for upcoming dates, as well as different videos that were done through the years as far as some of my TV work. You can go to YouTube and check out the gig that I did at the White House. There's a clip of a gig that I did with Stan Getz and Chick Corea,
yeah,
and even the great violinist Perlman, Itzhak Perlman. Yeah, he even did a little solo on the tune that there's a clip of called Summertime. It's some really cool stuff. There's the skydive video that I hope that's still on the website. I went skydiving on the 25th of November of 1998.
Wow.
The gig that I did with Ray Charles on the PBS special that we did. Oh, it's just really some cool stuff. There's a thing that I did with Elmo,
yes,
on Sesame Street.
Yes, and the thing that you did with Elmo was From My Head.
Yeah, From Your Head, that's right.
I had a thought, didn't find it on the ground. Do you know where thoughts are found? Very simply said, the thought came from my head. Got it from my head. Your head, from your head, do 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 da,
do 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 da.
I had a dream, had it lying fast asleep.
Whoa.
Down by where the willows weep.
Really?
On a grassy bed.
Whoa.
The dream came from my head. Got it from my head.
Whoa.
Dreams come from your head. From your head. I found a song, found it whistling in the rain. I found a song, found it singing in my brain.
Yeah.
The song came from my head.
Yeah.
Right here in my head.
Yeah.
Songs come from your head. From your head. Doo doo dee dee da.
Yeah.
know, that was really special. And but anyway, like I said, there are upcoming dates, and as time goes on, more and more will definitely be filled in. So
yeah, everyone should definitely take a visit to Diane Schuer. That's DianeSchuer.com. Make sure
that's
you check it.
It
out.
Please.
So much information. Oh, and by the way, your live release. You're going to have to tell me a little bit about that, because I understand that is actually the one I met yesterday that you dedicated to your husband.
Correct.
Tell me about that release, because it seems to only be available through the website.
It's something that I thought would really be a cool thing. It was done on the anniversary, actually, of when we first met. As of October 31, it would be 19 years ago. So, yeah, we met on October 31st, and that's when this recording was actually done in 2010. So it was on the shelf for a little while, and then we thought, okay, well, let's see what we can do about that. And it's with a lot of great players. Let's see, Randy Porter is on piano, Scott Steed is on bass, Reggie Jackson is on drums. No sax player on that record, but it was really a lot of fun. And my husband, Les Crockett, I call him Rocket Crockett, was in the audience, and you heard some of this album. You could hear him say, yes, dear.
Yes.
And when I asked, yes. I go, instead of dear, I go, yes, dear.
Yes.
And he goes, yes, dear.
Yes, I was listening to that.
While the guys were playing, I was thinking of the next tune, and I want to lead into it just by a little bit, if I may. It was 16 years ago today that I met up with Les Crockett, who is now my husband. And it was 16 years today that we met, yes. And we, in 94, and we met on a jazz cruise called the Holland America. And we were, and ironically enough, we left from New Orleans, Louisiana, on a Sunday afternoon. That's a true story. Isn't it dear?
Yes.
And viewing that in mind, I figured the next song would really be appropriate, because in essence, that's exactly what we did. It's a tune that was written by the Gershwins. Nice work if you can get it.
2, 3, 4. Become one who could ask for anything more.
there if you can get it. And if you get it, won't you tell me
how we carried on, you know, all the time. He used to be on the road with me for quite a bit, for about 3 years into our marriage and everything, and I'd come out of a restroom, you know, he couldn't go in there with me, and so I'd shout, "Dear!" You know, "Yes, dear!" You know, and some of those airport restrooms and outside are pretty echoey, so you could just hear it all the way down the hall. So,
now, where was this recorded?
It was in San Francisco, and the jazz room, it was called the Raz Room, at the Nico Hotel in downtown San Francisco. That's exactly where it was recorded.
Excellent. I'm going to have to backtrack because we skipped over a lot of stuff to get to this live release, but people should go to DianeShore.com, check it out, and obtain it upon checking it out.
Yeah, and go to the website. You can actually purchase
exactly.
any of the albums online, and it'll go directly to the website. Thank you very much. Okay.
Now,
1, 2, 3, 2, 2, 3.
Whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things. schnitzels with noodles, wild geese that fly with the moon on their wings. These are a few of my favorite things. Girls in white dresses with blue satin sashes, snowflakes that stay on my nose and eyelashes, silver white winters that melt into springs. These are a few of my favorite things. When the dog bites, when the bee stings, when I'm feeling sad, I simply remember my favorite things, and then I don't feel so Girls in white dresses with blue satin sashes. Snowflakes that stay on my nose and eyelashes. Silver white winters that melt into springs. These are a few of my favorite things. When the dog fights, when the bee sings, when a feeling's sad, I simply remember
with regard to being able to get this only through the website, I'm going to backtrack to your time with GRP Records. That was sort of like a big deal, I guess.
Oh, I was with them from 84, because that's when Beatles was released, up through 1997.
Okay.
Yeah, because the last album that I did was Blues for Sure.
Right.
And then I went to Concord and did Friends for Sure and then Swinging for Sure.
Right.
And then I did Midnight, yes. Those three with Concord, and then I did Surefire.
Surefire is the Latin-flavored album that you had.
Yeah, boy, was that ever. Yeah, man, that was just so much fun. And, you know, what's his name, Oscar?
Nevis.
Oscar Nevis?
Yes.
Yeah, Oscar Nevis was, he was so funny. You know, if he really liked a track that I did, he'd use the old Donald Trump expression, "You're fired." You know, he's hilarious when he really loved a track that I did, so.
Yes, Oscar Castro Nevis.
That's it, yeah.
Strange dear, but true dear, when I'm close to you dear, the stars fill the sky, so
Dead Night was done with Barry Manilow producing it, and he and I sang on the last track on a tune that he wrote called Anytime, and yeah, that was a very special, magical kind of thing. And, of course, the Friends for Sure CD, backtracking a little bit, had Stevie Wonder, Ray Charles,
yes,
Stephen Bishop. Those are the three major stars that were on there. And then, of course, the first track, which I'm sure you probably heard, was that Stan Getz did the solo. Phil Ramone was able to, just a genius, be able to interlay Stan's solo and put that on the track.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Wow.
Living for you is easy living. It's easy to live when you're in love. And I'm so in love. There's nothing in life but you. I never regret the years I'm giving. When you're in love, I'm happy to do whatever I do for you. For you. Maybe I'm a fool, but it's fun. People say you rule me with one wave of your hand, darling, it's grand. They just don't understand that living for you fun. People say you rule me with one wave of your hand. Darling, it's grand. They just don't understand that living for you is easy living. It's easy to live when you're in love.
And it's interesting because during that album I had pneumonia.
Oh.
And so I was running about 101 degree temperature on the day that Stevie Wonder showed up to do the tune Finally with. And how that came about, just to give you a little bit of the history, was I appeared on the Kennedy Center Honors. I think it was at the end of 99. And I said at the, right before I started, I just called to say I love you. I said, well, maybe you'll write one for me one day. And I just kind of chuckled. And Stevie took me at my word, and he wrote that beautiful song called Finally, which is the last track of Friends for Sure.
And we were talking about the Surefire release, and you recorded a version of Stevie Wonder's As.
That's right, and actually Caribbean Jazz Project was the name of Dave Samuel's group, and Stevie loved that version of As. Yeah, he made it a point to let me know how much he enjoyed it, and he heard that, and he was blown out of the water. He just loved it.
Well, I really enjoyed, finally, the melisma session. It's like the exchange of melismas. It's like the king and queen of melisma.
Well, and we sound alike
yes.
on phrases. Did
yes.
you notice that?
I did, indeed. And it was beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
Thank you.
Somehow I'm not the same. So glad
wind up, and I don't know how one asks that sort of question, because some people make a big deal about people using melismas, and Stevie does, and you do.
Mm-hmm.
And is it just your style?
What do you mean by melisma? I've never heard of that word.
Oh, okay. And somebody introduced it to me. So it's when Amazing Grace. It's like, Amazing Grace, an exaggerated version, but that's the kind.
Oh, I know what melisma is. Okay, I get it. But see, I don't do that with Amazing Grace.
No, that was just my example.
But yeah, I hear you. A lot of people use melismas, like Whitney Houston
right.
used it like over the top.
Right. And
Stevie Wonder used a lot more melisma on Finally than I did.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of, now that I know exactly what you're saying, I get exactly what you mean. So that was a little bit of an education. It brings me back to when I recorded my first country record in 1971. And, you know, Dinah Washington used a lot of melisma.
Yes.
And so I was doing this track, Dear Mommy and Daddy, and Jimmy Wakely, the guy that produced this on Decca Records, he said, he's from Oklahoma, so he had a twang. He says, Diane, don't sound so much like Dinah. And I thought, at first I kind of got a resentment there. You know, I thought, what? What's going on? And I thought, oh, I know. I'll sound like Patti Page, and then I'll just throw a melisma here, or as my sister would express it, a curly cue, you know.
and
so I just did that a little bit, and wow, melisma. I'll definitely remember that. You want more? You want more melisma? Some people have a lot of melisma and some don't, you know.
And, you know, when I heard The Gathering, and I guess because of the material, and as you mentioned earlier with Jimmy Wakely, that he had asked for less of that.
Yes.
I noticed in The Gathering there wasn't as much of that.
You know, it wasn't because the producer told me not to.
Mm-hmm.
It was something that I, especially in the Tammy Wynette things, the Patsy Cline, there was a little bit more in Healing Hands of Time.
Right.
Because it was so funky and it had that shuffle, whatever, that Alabama shuffle kind of deal, okay? The rest of them were pretty straight on, you know.
As a matter of fact, Healing Hands of Time is actually my favorite from The Gathering.
Yeah, it was the Willie Nelson composition.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's pretty funky. The way that Kirk Whalum just played his you-know-what off on it.
They're working while I'm missing you. Those healing hands of time. Soon they'll be dismissing you from this heart of mine. They'll lead me safely through the night, and I'll follow as though blind. My future time. Those healing hands of time. They let me close my eyes just then. Those healing hands of time. Time.
Elvis Presley knew how to temper melasma. He was wasn't a jazz singer or anything like that, but he really had that under control. People like him, people like Glenn Campbell, people like, oh, even Sammy Davis Jr., mm-hmm. that sounded more white than mm-hmm. a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean to sound anywhere at all racial. I'm mm-hmm. just, referring. You see where I'm coming from?
What's a different style?
Yeah, it's just a totally, totally different style. Uh-huh. So, yeah, melasma is something that when I do seminars at universities, I can talk about that. But I love the other tunes that really touch my heart, Beneath Still Waters, and, of course, the Tammy Wynette. I love Till I Get It Right and Till I Can Make It On My Own. Those really get me a lot.
I'll need time to get you off my mind, and I may sometimes bother you, try to be in touch with you, even ask too much of you from time to time. Now in
Why Can't He Be You, the first track, really gets me a lot. You know, when an artist, in fact, a very dear friend of mine, we're talking about that not long ago, that some of an artist's best work is when they've gone through pain. Like Frank Sinatra, for example, when he did 3 albums back to back after he lost Ava Gardner, was some of his best work. And it was because of the raw emotion. I mean, like an album that I did, like in tribute, I was going through at the time in my own personal experience so much pain.
And that was the Andre Fisher produced release?
Yes. Okay. When we got to the lyric, When Some Quarrel We've Had Needs Mending, I was crying. I was absolutely, the tears was just streaming down my face.
Thank you.
dreams to tell. Round midnight, round midnight, I do pretty well till after sundown. Supper time, I'm feeling sad, but it really gets bad round midnight. Memories always start round midnight, round midnight. Haven't got the heart to stand those memories when my heart is still with you. And old some quarrel we had needs mending. Does it mean that our love is ending? Midnight, round midnight.
And, you know, tunes like, you know, The Man I Love. And at that particular time, I had just broken up with someone, and I was actually in waiting for The Man I Love. And, you know, and like The Gathering, there are tunes that you can hear where it's painful.
I was just going to say that in The Gathering, it's as though you've really embodied the song. You've taken it, you know, like actresses read a script.
Mm-hmm.
It's
yeah.
as though these are vignettes. These songs
yeah.
are like little vignettes. Amazing.
But that's the only way, as far as authentication, if a person is going through a similar situation themselves, then they can really get down and really identify. And that's what artists of my caliber endeavor to do when we get into really, really deep into the work. I guess it's kind of like acting, although even actors, they oftentimes they can take from their own life experience and really be able to play the part. And this is kind of like, you know, what you were just talking about, vignettes. The same kind of thing is incorporated within the musical element itself.
Yes.
It's really an amazing process. Just like with these tunes that I was just mentioning about Frank Sinatra's legacy and Stan Getz's legacy, a lot of the tunes are about pain and loss in the different elements of love and all that it embraces. And then there are other songs that talk about the joy of the second time around and the hope of watch what happens and all of this kind of stuff. So that's what I endeavor to do in my own life experience, to be able to bring to the table and the different songs that I do.
And The Gathering was on Vanguard, yes?
Yes, it was,
okay.
Yes.
I noticed that you apparently were in Ed Shaughnessy's group at the Monterey
yes.
Jazz Festival. And
yes.
The group included the tenor jazz saxophonist Stan Getz. And you
yes.
did you continue to work together after that, or how did you wind up working with Stan Getz?
Well, there were two times that I appeared at the festival. The first time was in 75. Stan wasn't on that band.
Mm-hmm.
It was a group that Tommy Newsom and Ed Shaughnessy put together called Energy Force, and I did what Tommy labeled a gospel suite. I did that with the big band. And then in 1979, I appeared at the Monterey Jazz Festival, and I did it. And most of the press has me doing Amazing Grace.
Right.
But I didn't do Amazing Grace until I did the recording of Beatles.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's a lot of people don't, but that's whatever. I mean, you know, that's going to happen. You know, there's no, nothing's perfect. You know what I'm saying? And that's okay.
Well, this is why we actually talk to the people, so they can set the story straight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what the story is that I actually did two songs for the Monterey Jazz Festival in 1979. There was a Harold Arlen tune called Down With Love. I did a Charlie Mingus. It was dedicated to Charlie Mingus, and it was written by Joni Mitchell. It was called Chair in the Sky. And I did those two tunes on piano, and that's where Stan Getz heard me.
Oh.
And it was a cabaret kind of setup, even though there were thousands and thousands of people. So I did those two tunes, and that's where Stan Getz heard me. And then 3 years later, we were able to put it together where I appeared with him and a bunch of other wonderful musicians, Chick Corea, among many others, at the White House in 1982. And that was my first big, big exposure. And then I joined GRP Records and made Beatles in 84 with Dave Grusin and Stan Getz, among many other wonderful musicians.
How was it working with Stan Getz? How did you interact as far as signals, and what was it like?
He was a brilliant musician. He kept pounding into my head that less is more, because the melasma, he was constantly trying to have me tone that down a little bit.
Oh, my.
Yeah, it was really, very interesting, the interaction that we had. It was great. Mm. It was really fun.
Now that you mentioned toning down the melasma, and this is the second time you've mentioned someone asking you to tone it down.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? I mean, I know the first time you mentioned it made sense. You could see why it was requested. But do you generally agree that it should be toned down, or what?
You know, I do. I think that there are artists, but I will not name them,
mm-hmm.
because if they hear this, I want to protect them.
Yes.
But there are people, I think, that really use it to, it's over the top. It's hard for me to listen to if it's too much there. One of the people that I think is a real master at melasma is Adele. I think that she really is marvelous.
That's a good point. I thought the same thing, actually. Yes, I did, because there are people who can go over the top with that, and she is actually well-balanced, I believe.
I I couldn't agree more. And a lot of people, even now, a lot of people who have never seen pictures of me think that I'm black.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Lots of folks.
You have the Phoebe Snow syndrome.
Yeah, I think so. And that's just how it is. And that's okay. People are pleasantly surprised, hopefully, like, oh, wow. You know, if they didn't see me, they would never know.
Yeah, well, people thought the same thing about Phoebe Snow.
Uh-huh, yeah, exactly.
And she was fine as well with it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, yeah.
Back to the subject of GRP, being with GRP Records, and spending that time there. Did you decide to leave?
I think it was a unanimous kind of thing. I think it was talked about. The industry was changing at that point. Dave and Larry were getting ready to sell the company. Larry Rosen and Dave Grusin were getting ready to dissolve the company as we knew it then. There were big changes happening in the industry. It was all a part of that. And then, of course, on Atlantic Records, I did one record with them. And then, you know, the industry has just changed so much. People don't stay in recording companies, recording labels as anywhere near as long. You know, I've got to get with a company. I mean, the downloads have just taken things over.
Yes. As a matter of fact, I first have to say how much I really enjoyed the one record release that you did do. I know I mentioned it before, but I got to say it again. I really enjoyed the Atlantic Records release because it seemed to go in areas that you hadn't gone in before.
It's true. And Ahmet Erdogan was an amazing producer. He came over to my house and all of this kind of stuff, and he was a wonderful producer.
But then you went to, after Atlantic, you went to Concord.
Correct.
How was that experience? I mean, there were some nice releases that came from there, as you mentioned.
It was fabulous. Yeah, it was wonderful working with those people. It really was.
And your last release with Concord was Some Other Time.
Yeah.
There was, my goodness, I think my cat is scratching at the door.
Oh, your kitty is an indoor-outdoor kitty?
No, it's an indoor kitty, but I closed the door so she wouldn't come running in and jump around. She's fine.
Oh.
She's fine.
Oh, good. Oh, I love pusses, I'll tell you. I've checked on mine every day. Yeah, I just, for any one of you out there or cat lovers, I'm bringing a kitty home on Monday from the vet, relatively new kitty. She's part Siamese. Her name is Su Ling. Her name was Ling Ling, but I decided to call her Su Ling, or Lingy Ding, after my Siamese kitty that I had as a child. And my mom was dying of cancer when I had Su Ling, and was very, very much of a comfort. Between that and watching Lost in Space, my favorite show as a child.
It didn't hurt that Angela Cartwright was there, the little girl.
Oh, no, and of course, John Williams, they called him Johnny Williams then.
Mm-hmm.
Did such a wonderful score on that series. Incredible.
Yeah.
And I, you know, memorized most of that stuff by heart and would sit down and play most of the themes by heart and everything. Yeah, I really loved that show. I remembered hastily trying to dry the dishes at 7 o'clock on Wednesday evening and then plopping down in front of the set and watching it. And my mom was still alive in 65, and that's when it started. And I can give you the exact air date. It was September 15th.
Oh, my.
1965 when it started. And I remember sliding down the banisters to watch that show. Sitting in front of the TV with my twin brother and my sister. So.
When did your mother transition?
She transitioned in 1967 on January 7th, and she was 31 years old. She would have been 32 on March 1st.
Mm.
Yeah, it was kind of a interesting time for all of us as a family. And I remember a couple of nights later, it was a Monday night, she died Saturday at around noon. On Monday, I was over at my aunt's house. Her name was Bette Lisney, and she just bought this new stereo. And one of the tunes that was playing was a tune by the Beatles, All the Lonely People.
Mm.
Eleanor Rigby is the name of the song.
That's it. That's right.
And so I remember listening to that and just crying my eyes out.
Mm.
Yeah, and then that's when my hair was cut real short. And it's so interesting. And now my hair, once again, is shoulder length.
Yes, and you have a different look.
Yeah, totally different look. And it's really cool because it's a lot easier to can have a lot of variety. You can put it up in a ponytail. It can actually look straight and still look great, as well as being able to do the foo-foo thing on it, too. So I decided to wear my hair long. And
So anyone who has seen older pictures of Monsieur with the cropped look, you will now be pleasantly surprised by the new do.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, hey, you know, every few years it's good to get a metamorphosis going. And, you know, I've always struggled with weight. And so there's albums in all shapes and sizes. And you know what I mean? So, oh, and about my Siamese cat, you know, the new one that I just got, the one that is being brought home on Monday. For some reason, when I got to the vet, the 21st of March, I went to the vets. I had lost, just to give you a little history, I had lost a kitty. Her name was Kisa, which is Russian for kitty, but I called her Kisa La Mona Lisa, or Kisa for short. She unfortunately passed away on February 11th. She had inflammatory bowel disease, and it does affect cats. A couple weeks later, I went to the vets and picked out this kitty, and she trotted out of her cage and got into my lap and started going for my left boob. She just did headbutts on it for whatever reason. I don't know why, but she really loved that left boob. So, I mean, you know, I guess she just loves my big tatas, you know. So,
actually, have you ever sang any songs for your kitties?
Oh, I make up songs for my... Oh, and when Keister was given and drugged before she went to Rainbow Bridge, I sang over the rainbow to her as she was going out and up. And, and the whole hospital people at the cat clinic, the whole staff was just crying their eyes out. And, I sing to my kitties, you know, and puss, 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 you know, and...
Have you ever recorded a song for your kitties?
No, but you never know. Yeah. I may have to do that, and maybe, you know, through sampling, you know. In fact, I have, with Keiser, I have samples of her meows. Mm. In fact, there's a file in the thousands of files that I have of different things that I called Mournful Keiser, because I was about to leave for Fresno, and she answered me back every time. It was really funny with this long, mournful morale. Oh, I've got to call this file Mournful Keiser.
There's one thing I need to go back to, because I never actually finished it, with regard to record labels and distribution.
Yeah.
And since the distribution of your most recent release is happening online on your website, mm-hmm. DianeSchuer.com, how is this? What label are you on now?
I'm homeless for the moment.
Okay. And that's something that just happens to be right now, or?
We're looking. Okay. We're shopping around. But I wanted to do a bunch of this material, the Stan Getz and Frank Sinatra legacy. I wanted to do that first and then go into studio and actually record the track, but do it enough times as far as live dates. So that's the plan.
Oh.
But we're working on it. We're working on it.
Miss Diane Dietl-Schuer, is there anything that you need to bring up to the listeners that we haven't discussed?
We talked about recovery for those who are out there and that may be in the know. I've been almost 23 and a half years in recovery, and I'm very pleased about that. I did a song pertaining to that on the album Midnight. Barry Manilow wrote a tune called Life is Good. Alan Broadbent was going to play, but I really, really wanted to play.
Oh,
so
cool.
They finally relented and let me do it.
Yay!
So.
Never thought I'd see this day, or ever really feel this way. So safe, so sure, so unafraid, so grateful to be me. It's taken me so long to learn that stories change and pages turn. Life is and getting better, knock on wood, and send a letter to all the friends I knew who told me it was true. You were right, I was wrong. Life is good, knock on wood. can't believe the race is done, or that it's really me who won. So long I felt so sure I'd lose, or choose the longest way. I can't believe I sleep all night, or wake up smiling when it's light. Life is good and getting better. Knock on wood and send a letter to all the friends I knew who told me it was true. You were right. Was wrong. Life is good. Knock on wood. Maybe I've just seen enough to see beyond the stupid stuff, to know that I won't die if something makes me cry. Or maybe I've just grown so dumb, I think the best is yet to come. Or maybe, could it be, I finally just like me. Life is good and getting better. Knock on wood and send a letter to all the friends I knew, most of all to you. You were right. I was wrong. Life is good. Knock on wood. The hurts don't last too long. Life is
all I can say is, for people who are out there that have disabilities, keep on keeping on and keep pursuing the dreams and go for the technology that's out there. Don't be afraid to ask for help when you need it. It's still, regardless of whether a person is blind or deaf or whatever, it's still a great world with wonderful resources. I mean, there's always progress that can be made, but hey, that's a part of life. And what I can say philosophically is that regardless of what's happening in my own life, transition-wise of any sort, I do my very best to come up with an attitude of gratitude, no matter where I'm at, and that I'm responsible for my own attitude. And I know that if I'm in a negative place, that I have the choice to be able to turn it around and put it into a positive light. So I hope that you listeners didn't mind if I got just a little bit philosophical on where I'm at in life, because really, I feel like the feline population, I've lived at least a couple of different lives, and I'm venturing into another chapter of my life, and it's very exciting.
Well, I'm grateful for the time, your generosity of time. Deedles, thank you so much, especially for ending on that note, because you are nothing but uplifting and inspirational, and thank you so much.
Oh, girlfriend, it's my pleasure, I'm telling you. And
have fun with your little kitty.
I hope to actually meet you in person, you know, come to the Blue Note when I'm there next.
Yes.
Yeah, it'll be my 23rd year.
Oh, well, I'm looking forward to that. I and everyone else will be checking Diane Schuer, DianeSchuer.com, regularly to find out when you'll be back to New York and everywhere else.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
You are so welcome.
Hello. Bueno, this is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.